Since his death in 2006, the Gordon Parks Foundation has been digging through every single one of Parks' photographs. The end goal, a mass publication of his work. The Foundation's latest book, Gordon Parks Back to Fort Scott, was published just this year. Fort Scott, Kansas is Parks' hometown. He was born in 1912 into poverty and segregation, and the youngest of 15 children. His mother died when he was just 14, so he had to fend for himself early on. One of his first jobs was playing piano and writing songs in a brothel. Going to Fort Scott was one of Parks' earliest assignments at Life magazine, where he was the first African-American staff photographer. He tracked down some of his childhood classmates and documented their lives. The story, however, never ran in Life, and so these photos are a new discovery. They are also on display at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. But really, it's Atlanta that's a Gordon Parks mecca right now.
Well, I was very interested in the fact that the High Museum was going to be showing Gordon Parks' work and in collaboration with the foundation, in recognition of the High, and in collaboration with Jackson Fine Art, we kind of turned Atlanta into a Gordon Parks kind of a city.
That was Arnica Dawkins, owner of Arnica Dawkins Gallery. Like the High Museum of Art and Jackson Fine Art, she is exhibiting Parks' work. He bought his first camera when he was 25, a Voigtlander Brilliant, and from there he worked at the Farm Security Administration to document American life after the Great Depression. During his time there, he shot one of his most iconic photos, American Gothic, Washington, D.C. It's a play on Grant Wood's famous painting of a farmer with a pitchfork and his spinster daughter in front of a house.
Roy Stryker assigned him to chronicle Washington, D.C. However, Gordon Parks was met with a lot of racial tension. He was turned away from all of the places he was trying to go and document and went back to Mr. Stryker. Mr. Stryker said, hey, just do something a little closer to home. So he met Miss Ella Watson, who was a charwoman, and befriended her and did a body of work and documented her life and her community for 4 months.
After his time at the FSA, he freelanced at Vogue and started working at Life magazine in 1948. In 1956, the magazine sent Parks on assignment to Alabama to document segregation in the South.
He came down with a writer, and they pursued this story. They ended up focusing on a single family, the Thornton family, and several generations of that family who were living in different parts of Alabama. This kind of project was really quite different from other work that you think of being associated with the civil rights movement of the time.
That was Brett Abbott, photography curator at the High Museum, which has segregation's story on display. One reason these civil rights photos stand out is that they document segregation in more subtle ways. Instead of marches and riots, a group of young girls are separated from a nice white-only playground by a fence. Or a well-dressed black family waits for a bus near the sign, Colored Waiting Room. The photos are also in color.
One picture in particular, which isn't so much the more popular picture.
Anna Walker Skillman, gallery owner at Jackson Fine Art, is also exhibiting segregation story.
Is an image of the family on the porch. There is Mr. Thornton and his daughter, Allie Mae Causey, and Allie Mae's stepchildren, two boys and two girls, standing on this porch. And the way that they're looking out the porch and the two girls are looking at something and the clothes and the patterns and the colors were so vibrant. The girls had, you know, a hint of red lipstick and a red skirt, and Mrs. Causey is sewing a dress.
Life did run 26 of Parks' photos of the Thornton family, but recently the Gordon Parks Foundation found an additional 200 transparencies from the series. This, along with the fact that these photos are in color, make this a most alluring exhibit for curators. For the series, Parks mostly just stumbled upon the Thornton family when he arrived in Alabama.
It really was not intentional. He met Mr. Thornton in one of the little stores and ended up going back to his house and living with him for a couple of weeks and then meeting his daughter and going and living out in the country.
And recently, Jackson Fine Art had an unexpected visitor.
We've actually had one of the Thornton's granddaughters come to the gallery. She had no idea that her family was photographed. and she's here in Atlanta, and that was really a incredible moment.
At Arnika Dawkins Gallery, the series American Champion covers Muhammad Ali in London and Miami. It ran in Life magazine in 1966, towards the end of Parks' time there.
Gordon Parks was really well known for was developing a wonderful relationship with his subject matter. So he traveled with Ali over to London, and I think the images that he captured there just resonates and shows Ali in a very tender and introspective kind of view.
Parks had immense charisma, which perhaps accounts for his ability to break down racial barriers in much of his life. It also accounts for his prolific network of friends. At the end of his time at Life in 1968, scholars, celebrities, socialites, they all appreciated the work he had done at the magazine. Muhammad Ali remained his good friend after their time together. Langston Hughes came and visited Gordon Parks from time to time, and Parks was special friends with Gloria Vanderbilt until his death. The next racial barrier he broke was in Hollywood. In 1969, he became the first African-American to direct a major Hollywood film, The Learning Tree, which was based on his autobiography of segregation in Kansas. He then directed the film Shaft. Shaft was part of the blaxploitation film movement, a subset of exploitation films. The genre featured primarily black cast, showed black protagonists fighting the man, and had funk and soul music for the soundtracks. Both Shaft and The Learning Tree are in the National Film Registry, which preserves films that are culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Parks was a true Renaissance man, covering a swath of American artistry.
He was a photographer, journalist, composer, he was a filmmaker.
He was also a writer, a poet.
And right now, the galleries highlight how it's a good year for Parks, particularly with the Gordon Parks Foundation uncovering and releasing never-before-seen work. But last year and the year before were also good years for Parks.
But I also think in 2 years will be a good year for Gordon. When he left, he definitely left a huge legacy, and it doesn't seem to be, you know, slowing down.
In an old TV interview with Parks, he said,
"Well, I always wanted very much to express myself. I possibly would have been a painter. I never dreamt that I would be a writer. I never dreamt that I'd be a photographer."
For City Lights, I'm Gabby Watts.